On a Moscow street, a navy blue BMW 760 races against a Porsche Cayenne, ending in a fatal crash that kills 23-year-old Nikolai Kolya Mikhailo. This wasn't just any traffic accident, it was the death of a key figure in the global spam ecosystem. At Kolya's funeral, the world's most notorious spammers gathered to pay respects. Igor Desp-Gusev, Dmitry St. D. Stupin, and Dmitry Google Nechvalad. These men weren't just mourning a colleague. They were the architects of a digital parasite that affects us all daily, generating billions in illicit profits while costing society vastly more in cybersecurity expenses. Brian Krebs's Spam Nation became an instant cybersecurity classic upon its 2014 release, praised by Bill Gates as a fascinating look into the world of cybercrime. Through unprecedented access to leaked documents, interviews with major players, and years of investigative journalism, Krebs reveals the shocking truth behind the spam emails we delete every day, a multi-billion dollar criminal enterprise with ties to organized crime, corrupt officials, and devastating real-world consequences. To understand spam's threat, we must examine the dark foundations of cybercrime havens. Bulletproof networks, or bulletproof hosting providers, mostly based in Russia and former Soviet states, operated through a mix of legal and illegal methods that made them virtually untouchable by law enforcement. These virtual pirate coves could stay online despite international pressure because they secured political and operational protection through kidnapping, bribery, extortion, blackmail, and corruption. The Russian business network exemplified this model, charging $600 to $800 monthly for hosting, 10 times legitimate rates. These exorbitant fees weren't just profit. They funded essential bribes to local authorities who would ignore foreign law enforcement inquiries. RBN maintained an abuse team solely for appearances, requiring impossible to obtain Russian judicial indictments to process any takedown requests, creating a perfect haven for fraudsters. Mikhailo Corp refined this business model by focusing on efficiency, eliminating middlemen, reducing prices, and investing in faster networks. Most importantly, Mikhailo distinguished itself with exceptional technical support and customer service, qualities earlier providers had overlooked due to limited competition. RBN's origins trace back to Belarus and child pornography. Alexander Rybatsky, a 22-year-old computer prodigy, joined forces with Gennady Loganov from the Village Crime Group. After various criminal ventures, including stealing a client database from Russia's largest payment processor, Cyberplat, Rybatsky established AlphaPay with Moscow's Alpha Bank to process child porn payments through shell companies. The operation reportedly attracted 100,000 daily visitors and generated nearly $5 million monthly. When competition between rival payment processors led to destructive cyber warfare, Rybatsky pivoted to web hosting, creating the infamous Russian Business Network. Under 20-year-old hacker Eugene Flyman Sergenko, RBN evolved into cybercrime's epicenter by 2007. As a Washington Post reporter, Krebs spent 4 months gathering evidence from major security firms before publishing Shadowy Russian Firm Seen as Conduit for Cybercrime in October 2007. This exposure forced RBN's internet providers to abandon them, scattering cybercriminals worldwide. Though this created new challenges, it represented the first major victory against organized cybercrime. Nearly a year later, Krebs targeted Atrivo, a California hosting provider notorious for ignoring law enforcement requests. His reporting led to Atrivo being gradually excluded from the internet, hastening the demise of the infamous Stormworm botnet. Shortly after, Krebs received a warning. Tell Krebs, nice job on Atrivo, but if he's thinking about doing Mikhailo next, he's pushing his luck. Despite the threat, Krebs was already investigating Mikhailo. On November 11, he sent incriminating evidence to Mikhailo's internet partners, showing how servers controlling the world's top 5 spam botnets were hosted there. Within hours, Hurricane Electric terminated all connections to Mikhailo, effectively wiping it off the internet. Global spam volumes instantly plummeted by 75% as millions of bots lost connection to their control servers. On May 14, 2010, Krebs received a disturbing email with veiled threats referencing his wife. The timing was suspect, arriving just 2 days after he'd informed Pavel Vrublevsky about an upcoming story revealing something shocking. Vrublevsky, whom multiple sources identified as running one of the internet's most notorious pharmaceutical spam operations, had been appointed chairman of Russia's anti-spam working group. When confronted, Vrublevsky denied any connection to spam and accused Krebs of being bribed to write negative stories about him. He threatened legal action, and leaked emails later revealed he had hired a Washington, D.C. law firm preparing to spend over $100,000 on a defamation case. Though his attorneys eventually talked him out of it, this marked the beginning of Krebs' deep dive into the spam underworld. Around this time, Krebs began receiving massive leaks of ChronoPay's internal documents from anonymous hackers. The sheer volume and interconnectedness of these materials, tens of thousands of emails, accounting documents, and recorded phone conversations, proved their authenticity, which Vrublevsky later confirmed. These documents meticulously detailed ChronoPay's involvement in rogue pharmacy and fake antivirus operations, revealing an elaborate network of shell companies and offshore accounts. Analyzing the leaked materials was challenging. The emails were filled with spam themselves and almost all written in Russian. Fortunately, Krebs had spent years teaching himself Russian to navigate hostile underground forums. The documents revealed hundreds of emails between Vrublevsky and Stanislav Maltsev, a former Russian Ministry of Internal Affairs investigator who had been investigating Vrublevsky before being hired as his head of security. After Krebs published his story, Vrublevsky began calling him daily from different mobile numbers, a tactic he claimed helped successful Russian businesses evade government surveillance. Despite his crassness and insults, he was disarmingly charming and funny, constantly sharing anecdotes about Russian power brokers and cybercriminals. In these conversations, Vrublevsky portrayed himself as an anti-cybercrime crusader and even offered to fly Krebs to Moscow to prove his innocence. After a month of these calls, Krebs realized Vrublevsky was feeding him information about other cybercriminals to divert attention from himself. When confronted with this theory, he burst out laughing and grudgingly acknowledged Krebs' insight. Meanwhile, an anonymous source called Boris, likely Igor Gusev, Vrublevsky's rival, sent Krebs massive troves of compromising ChronoPay data. As these leaks crossed his desk, Krebs realized he was sitting on gigabytes of internal data from two of the world's largest spam operations, caught in the middle of what would become known as the Pharma Wars, a bitter feud between former business partners that would ultimately bring down both empires. Though Krebs' ultimate goal was unmasking the botmasters behind most of the world's spam, he decided to first investigate the people directly affected, customers who purchased pills from spam advertisements. Using leaked data containing contact information for over 1 million customers, he interviewed dozens of buyers about their motivations, avoiding those who purchased only erectile dysfunction drugs after an early uncomfortable call where a wife learned about her husband's secret Cialis purchase. The primary motivation for spam pharmacy customers was affordability, especially for those treating chronic conditions. Americans, who face the world's highest prescription drug prices, were particularly susceptible. While other countries implemented price controls, U.S. medication costs continued rising. Generic drugs increased 5.3% in 2012, while brand-name drugs jumped 25%. This price disparity, combined with high research and development costs and the expensive FDA approval process, around $350 million per new drug, created perfect conditions for spam pharmacies to thrive. Many buyers sought discretion, either from embarrassment or to hide purchases from spouses. These customers typically fell into two groups: those self-treating venereal diseases and those ordering impotence drugs to perform for partners. Order histories revealed some customers repeatedly fit into both categories. The ease of ordering prescription drugs online without a doctor visit appealed to many customers. Many buyers were simply purchasing medications they had previously been prescribed, essentially self-prescribing to avoid doctor visits and higher pharmacy prices. Some buyers with medical knowledge attempt to bypass doctor visits by self-diagnosing and ordering medications directly. Kimberly, a nurse struggling with fertility while her military husband faced deployment, ordered Clomid online rather than consulting a fertility specialist. Instead of having to pay a doctor tons of cash to explain something I already knew how to do, I opted to do it myself, she explained. When the pills arrived from India with an expired date, she demanded and received a refund. Perhaps most concerning were customers purchasing controlled substances like painkillers and stimulants, primarily through RX promotion rather than GlovMed. Goran, a 41-year-old former Eastern European POW living in the U.S. with severe back injuries, spends $250 to $500 monthly on hydrocodone and tramadol after doctors stopped prescribing pain medication. Without pain medication, he claims he couldn't manage his transportation business. If you don't work, you're homeless. Analysis of the GlovMed database revealed concerning patterns. Customers making more than five orders had an 80 to 85% chance of purchasing tramadol or soma. These pills have approximately $5 street value, potentially yielding $1,300 profit per bottle if resold individually. UCSD researchers found painkillers and restricted drugs generated 48% of RX Promotion's revenue, suggesting abuse drove substantial demand. Ordering drugs from online pharmacies can be deadly, as demonstrated by Marcia Bergeron's tragic death in 2006. After ordering medications from a supposedly Canadian pharmacy, the 57-year-old died from poisoning by heavy metals like uranium and lead found in her pills. Her symptoms included hair loss, blurred vision, nausea, and extreme fatigue before succumbing just after Christmas. While GlovMed markets drugs as Canadian, most ship from unregulated facilities in India, China, and Pakistan. India's $10 billion pharmaceutical industry produces vast quantities of generic medications, often circumventing Western patents to create affordable alternatives. Though this makes life-saving drugs accessible in poorer countries, it raises serious safety concerns. According to various studies, 8 to 10% of drugs imported to the U.S. are counterfeit or substandard, with global counterfeit medicine sales exceeding $75 billion. Customers ordering from spam-advertised pharmacies play Russian roulette with their health. SpamIt used over 40 different suppliers, with most medications coming from a half dozen dropshippers in India and Hong Kong. The fulfillment system automatically selected suppliers based on lowest bid rather than safety considerations. One concerning case was UK resident Deborah G., who ordered weight loss drugs from a GlovMed-affiliated site. After taking the medications, she required emergency hospitalization for depression and stomach illness. Laboratory testing revealed her pills contained poisons, cement, and talcum powder. Though she received a full refund after threatening legal action, her case highlights the dangers of counterfeit pharmaceuticals. Despite the dangers posed by rogue pharmacies, neither the FDA nor pharmaceutical companies have taken substantial steps to combat them through comprehensive drug testing. John Horton of LegitScript explains this reluctance stems from testing costs, constantly changing suppliers, and perhaps most significantly, fear that tests might reveal many rogue pharmacy drugs are chemically similar to approved medications. With over 41,000 active online pharmacies and only about 200 legitimate ones, consumers have a 99% chance of using an unapproved website when ordering medications online. The task of testing rogue pharmacy drugs has fallen largely to academics like Stefan Savage at UCSD, whose team made over 800 test purchases from spam-advertised pharmacies. Surprisingly, they found that drugs contained correct active ingredients in appropriate amounts, though they couldn't test for contaminants. Gary Warner at UAB attempted similar research but encountered bureaucratic obstacles. Despite having permission to test illegal substances like cocaine, they couldn't get FDA approval to test spam-purchased pills. Even pharmaceutical giant Pfizer showed interest in collaborating only if they could suppress findings showing the drugs were genuine, revealing their conflicted priorities. Despite losing billions to counterfeiters, Pfizer declined to help the FBI investigation, likely because they had just settled a $2.3 billion fraud case with the Justice Department over misleading marketing practices, matching their annual Viagra revenue. The pharmaceutical industry's reluctance to test spam-ordered drugs leaves consumers without objective data about their safety, potentially exposing them to dangerous contaminants, while pharmaceutical companies avoid findings that might show these cheaper alternatives are equally effective. The spam ecosystem operates through partnercas, affiliate marketing networks, where spammers can easily switch between programs offering better terms. These partnerships benefit both sides. Spammers, called adverts, focus solely on driving traffic while earning 30-35% commissions, and program sponsors avoid legal risks associated with botnet operations. Most successful spammers work with multiple partnercas simultaneously, creating a frustrating balloon effect for anti-spam efforts. Shutting down one operation simply shifts traffic elsewhere. To address the vulnerability of relying on a small number of top affiliates who generated 75-90% of revenue, Partnerca Bosses attempted to establish a virtual cartel for online pharmacy operations. In September 2007, Dmitry Stupin and Igor Gusev initiated discussions with competitors like RX Partners to prevent disputes, price wars, and affiliate migration. Their goal was to cap affiliate commissions at 40% and standardize drug prices. Chat logs reveal negotiations with Eva Pharmacy, Bulker.biz, about creating uniform conditions, including two-week payment holds and reduced commissions of 30-35%. Running a successful spam operation requires substantial resources. Top-earning affiliates typically own large botnets, while smaller players must rent installs from botmasters, often surrendering up to 50% of their commissions. Effective spam operations need sophisticated software to distribute workload across infected machines, track delivery statistics, and scrub inactive email addresses. Despite causing worldwide anti-spam expenditures many times their profits, these operations typically earn only about 20% net profit on gross revenue. Remarkably, these spam operators view themselves as legitimate entrepreneurs rather than criminals. Savage observed in leaked chats between Gusev and Stupin that they constantly sought to add value to their offerings, even debating whether to add penis-extending devices to their shops. The pharma and spam guys don't fundamentally think of themselves as criminals at all, Savage explains. Their mental model is that they're selling a quality product to an audience demanding it, with laws merely representing Western power structure obstacles to their marketplace. Cybercrime forums provide structure to this disorganized crime ecosystem. These online communities serve multiple purposes, allowing novices to establish trustworthy reputations, enabling criminals to purchase missing components for their operations, providing self-help resources, and creating marketplaces where crooks with different skills can buy and sell illicit goods and services. Forums follow a consistent structure, with sub-forums dedicated to specializations like spam, banking fraud, malware development, identity theft, and black SEO. These communities maintain order through reputation systems, escrow services, and strict codes of ethics. Members caught cheating others are ostracized or banned. Reputation points regulate behavior so effectively that even disputes involving tens of thousands of dollars are resolved amicably rather than risk negative forum feedback. Despite law enforcement attempts to shut them down, mature cybercrime forums simply relocate to more bulletproof hosting with enhanced security measures. The most effective anti-spam efforts have targeted identifying and apprehending top individual spammers rather than shuttering their online gathering places. By October 2011, leaked Spamit and RX promotion data provided crucial information for identifying the world's top spammers. A Microsoft Excel spreadsheet labeled registration data found in ChronoPay documents became the Rosetta Stone for unmasking these individuals. The spreadsheet revealed that someone at ChronoPay had compiled detailed information about the most active spammers, including their real identities and contact information. One of the most significant discoveries was linking a WebMoney account under the alias Software Seller to Dmitry Sergeyevich Nechvolod, the operator of Cutwhale, the largest spam botnet at the time. This account had earned over $175,000 promoting pharmacy websites for Spamit. Nechvolod, an elite programmer specializing in Unix systems and information security, ran a legitimate software firm called Digital Infinity Developers Group while maintaining and renting out the Cutwhale botnet, marketed as Zero Bulk Psych Evolution. By 2008, his botnet controlled 125,000 infected computers capable of sending 16 billion spam messages daily. Like many cybercriminals, he spent lavishly on luxury cars and a fast lifestyle, while offering Moscow-based programmers competitive salaries with benefits packages to expand his operation. Another major player was a hacker using the nicknames Cosma, Tarelka, Bird, and Ad1, who earned over $3 million in Spamit commissions over 3 years. His spam operation was powered by the Rustock botnet, which initially focused on pump-and-dump stock scams before expanding to pharmacy spam in 2007. At its peak, Rustock infected over 150,000 PCs and could send 30 billion spam messages daily. Cosma lived dangerously. He once told Stupin he'd been mugged and held hostage by thugs who targeted him for his $100,000-plus Porsche Cayenne, which he replaced with a less conspicuous BMW 530 Xi. His real identity appears to be Dmitry A. Sergeyev, a Belarusian-educated programmer who ironically expressed interest in working for Google. Another major spammer was Severa, indicted in the U.S. in 2007 as a partner of convicted American spammer Alan Rowski, but never arrested due to his residence in Russia. Severa operated the sophisticated Wolodak botnet, believed to be an update to the earlier Stormworm. At its peak, Wolodak sent 1.5 billion spam emails daily, with innovative peer-to-peer communication systems that made it resilient against takedown attempts. Another major spammer was Jera, whose operations generated over 80,000 pharmaceutical sales, bringing Spamit more than $6 million in revenue, and earning Jera and his associates over $2.7 million. Evidence suggests Jera was the mastermind behind the Grum botnet, capable of sending 18 billion emails daily before its 2012 takedown. Igor A. Artemovich, aka Engel, and his brother Dmitry maintained the powerful Festi botnet, which at its peak delivered a third of all global spam. Initially working for both RX Promotion and Spamit, Engel became increasingly hostile toward Spamit in 2009 after suspecting commission theft. While Spamit administrators denied shaving his commissions, leaked chats revealed that botmaster Google had indeed hijacked portions of Festi's traffic. By summer 2008, Spamit and GlovMed had become the world's largest rogue internet pharmacy operation, attracting top spammers and generating nearly $6 million monthly. Yet despite this success, co-owner Igor Desp Gusev was contemplating leaving cybercrime behind for a legitimate government position at Russia's Ministry of Economic Development. Tensions were mounting between Gusev and his business partner Dmitry Stupin. While vacationing in Spain with his family, Gusev revealed his potential career change to Stupin, who responded with frustration. Stupin argued they could triple profits by focusing on their existing business, but Gusev was more concerned about security than money. The most important thing is to retain it, multiply it, to ensure that nobody is going to seize it. Their feud was interrupted by urgent news from Gusev's hacker friend Alexei Leha. Leha had encountered a drunk Yuri Helman Kabayenkov, Pavel Vrublevsky's partner in RX Promotion, who boasted about bribing local police to open a criminal investigation into Gusev for money laundering. Hellman claimed he needed money to pay off police colonels and generals working for him. The confrontation between Gusev and Vrublevsky escalated into the Pharma Wars, a costly grudge match between the world's largest pharmacy partner cop proprietors. Each spent fortunes bribing officials to ruin the other, and both succeeded. Gusev and Vrublevsky were fundamentally incompatible partners. Gusev was thoughtful, erudite, deliberate, self-deprecating, and frugal, a golden boy from a wealthy family with classical education. Vrublevsky was vulgar, impulsive, loquacious, self-aggrandizing, and extravagant, looking a decade older than his mid-30s. They met through their connections to extreme pornography businesses in 1998, with Gusev running digital internet billing and Vrublevsky operating Red & Partners. In 2003, they formed ChronoPay in the Netherlands, but their partnership deteriorated within months due to constant disagreements. 2 years after splitting from ChronoPay, Gusev had built successful operations with GlovMed and SpamIt, generating millions monthly and employing top Moscow programmers. In 2007, Vrublevsky and Hellman launched RX Promotion to compete, specializing in highly restricted prescription medications like hydrocodone and Valium, selling to customers without prescriptions. Despite Vrublevsky's early warnings, Gusev underestimated his former partner's resolve and political connections. By 2010, Gusev finally accepted he was under investigation by Russian FSB agents targeting him as spammer number one in Russia. This investigation coincided with President Dmitry Medvedev's push to attract foreign investment for Skolkova, Russia's attempt at creating its own Silicon Valley. Gusev attempted to bribe officials by sponsoring the Volleyball Federation of Russia for approximately $500,000, hoping to leverage the influence of its head, former FSB director Nikolai Petrushev. Gusev explained that Russian sports leagues functioned as vehicles for funneling money to policymakers. In Russia, sports is not really a business, it's a way of getting business settled. By early 2010, Gusev and Stupin had spent over $400,000 on bribes to Russian officials to delay the case against them. Gusev found a problem-solver lawyer who promised to ensure Vrublevsky's incarceration and business destruction for $1.5 million. In summer 2010, thousands of ChronoPay emails and documents were leaked, exposing Vrublevsky's denied activities. When Gusev denied involvement, Vrublevsky retaliated by paying a hacker to leak the SpamIt and GlovMed customer database to American authorities. After the database leak, Gusev fled Russia with his family, launching readiblog.com to publicly document Vrublevsky's past. The blog attracted hundreds of comments from Vrublevsky's enemies detailing grievances against him. Meanwhile, global spam volumes dropped significantly as both operations suffered from the ongoing war. The most significant impact on the spam economy came from academic researchers who mapped the money laundering network supporting pharmacy affiliate programs. By early 2010, researchers from George Mason University, the International Computer Science Institute, and UC San Diego were making hundreds of test buys from shady websites selling knockoff drugs, counterfeit software, and fake antivirus products. Led by Professor Stefan Savage, they aimed to identify the financial institutions profiting from these transactions, believing that public exposure would damage the industry. Despite bureaucratic obstacles and resistance from both government agencies and pharmaceutical companies, their research revealed the critical vulnerabilities in the payment processing systems that kept spam operations profitable. The financial pressure from Visa's crackdown devastated pharmacy affiliate programs, with one manager lamenting that Visa's audits, reputation risks, and other hassles had caused many banks to refuse pharmacy business entirely. Another spammer put it bluntly, "Fucking Visa is burning us with napalm." Desperate pill shop processors began miscoding pharmacy transactions to evade detection, using transaction codes for lower risk activities. Researchers found they could disrupt these operations by simply calling U.S. banks to alert them about miscoded transactions, helping banks avoid Visa's hefty fines. Some programs implemented extreme security measures, like requiring photo ID and credit card scans, but these backfired as legitimate customers abandoned their purchases. One affiliate complained their conversion rate dropped to zero after implementing these requirements. In June 2011, Pavo Vrublevsky fled to the Maldives after learning Moscow prosecutors were preparing criminal charges against him for the July 2010 cyber attack on Aeroflot's ticketing systems. Russian authorities convinced him to return voluntarily, whereupon he was arrested and sent to Lefortovo, a notorious high-security prison. Prosecutors alleged Vrublevsky had hired the Artimovich brothers, operators of the Festi botnet, to attack Assist, Aeroflot's payment processor, while ChronoPay was bidding for Aeroflot's contract. Though Vrublevsky initially confessed to ordering the attack, he later recanted. Leaked chat logs revealed Gusev and Stupin had paid $1.5 million to bring criminal prosecution against Vrublevsky and $50,000 to start the case against the Artimovich brothers. The case against Vrublevsky likely stemmed from his rivalry with Gusev rather than pursuit of justice. Despite questionable evidence, all four defendants were found guilty in July 2013. Vrublevsky and the Artimovich brothers received 2.5-year sentences, while Permyakov got 2 years for cooperating. Vrublevsky was unexpectedly released in June 2014, less than a year into his term, possibly connected to Russia's need to develop a national payment system after Visa and MasterCard stopped servicing Russian banks following sanctions over Ukraine. Strong password management is essential since not every service offers two-factor authentication. Password managers like KeePass, PasswordSafe, RoboForm, and LastPass can generate and store complex passwords while requiring users to remember only one master password. For those managing their own passwords, best practices include using combinations of words, numbers, symbols, and mixed case letters, avoiding usernames as passwords, steering clear of easily guessed information like birthdays or pet names, avoiding dictionary words unless modified with numbers and punctuation, rejecting simple keyboard combinations like QWERTY, creating long passphrases rather than short passwords, and never reusing passwords across sensitive websites. Length provides better security than mere complexity, as each additional character exponentially increases a password's resistance to brute force attacks. Never use the same password at multiple sensitive websites, especially never reuse your email password elsewhere. Antivirus software and firewalls aren't enough protection when today's malware is designed to evade detection, especially in the critical first 24 hours after release. The concept of defense in depth requires multiple security layers, with you as the most important layer. Following Krebs's three rules for online safety dramatically reduces risk. First, if you didn't go looking for it, don't install it. Avoid scareware, fake codecs, and unsolicited software by only installing programs you specifically sought out from official sources. Second, if you installed it, update it. Keep all applications current with security patches. Third, if you no longer need it, remove it. Uninstall unused programs to improve performance and reduce security vulnerabilities. As the spam ecosystem evolves, new threats emerge. Ransomware rose as PartnerCA programs struggled to find banks willing to process cards for scareware payments. Cybercriminals also became more efficient, harvesting every valuable piece of data from infected systems, passwords, license keys, social media accounts, all sellable in underground markets. The battle against spam and cybercrime continues, but understanding the ecosystem is the first step toward protecting yourself. As Krebs concludes, all internet users either contribute to or combat online fraud through their security practices, with no middle ground remaining in today's threat landscape.